Honor to open the House Committee on Education, the Subcommittee on Education Innovation. Today is Thursday, April 12th, and it's just a little after 1 p.m. Thank you for everybody that's here in attendance to help us do our work today. We're going to change our agenda just a little bit. We did not get to House Bill 2885 on Tuesday, and so we're going to put that one first. And then we'll do the public hearings and the work session that are as presented in our agenda. So we're just moving 2885 up to the top. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2885. And Mr. Olson, if you'll remind us a little bit about the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2885 directs the Department of Education to award grants to remote and necessary school districts. Establishes the Remote and Necessary School District Fund, appropriates funds continuously to the Department of Education for grants. It sunsets on June 30th, 2009, appropriates money from the General Fund to the Department for grants, and declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. The Dash 2 Amendment, which you have before you, replaces the text and makes the following important changes. It deletes language having interest earned by the fund to be credited to the fund. That's always a problem with Ways and Means. It clarifies that the grants are awarded each fiscal year and splits up that the $4.4 million is split with half awarded in each of the two fiscal years. Modifies the grant guidelines to require districts to submit a budget and a plan for the use of the grant, slightly different than the original requirements. It requires the legislative interim committees on revenue to conduct a study on the adequacy of funding the small school districts, including looking at current additional funding for small and remote schools, which schools are not receiving adequate funding, and the long-term effect of that, and then to, based on the study, make recommendations and consider pre-session filing legislation. We've just learned that there's a suggested technical fix to the Dash 2 amendment, but that could be done in between the subcommittee and the full committee. House Bill 2885 does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Any comments or questions about our background information? I will accept a motion for Representative
Wolish. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2885.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. There is a motion to move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2885. Discussion, comments, questions? Representative Dahlin, do you have
good bill.
Good bill should pass, I know. But did you have a suggestion what words you, or what... you're going to make a little bit of a change in there?
Yes. I just had a conversation with Brian Reeder, Oregon Department of Education, and the 110 ADM presents a problem in that ADM isn't computed until after the school year. So we're going to change 110 ADM prior to in the prior year. So okay. We're going to put in three words. I think I can almost have it done by tomorrow. When the full meets, and away we go.
Oh, yeah. We could do the amendment at the full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Three-word amendment.
Okay. Just so the committee knows that that will be coming when it gets to the full. Any questions? Okay. That was on the Dash 2s, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The Dash 2s are in. I'll take a motion on the bill.
I'm here.
Representative Roblin.
I move House Bill 2885 to the Education Committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
There's been a motion to move House Bill 2885 with the Dash 2 amendments to the full committee. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, just thank you. Since I'm not on the full committee, and this will be my last chance to wave this bill goodbye before it moves on, just to say it is really heartwarming, I think, and an optimistic thing for the state to see my district, Portland Public School District, in connection with some of these small and remote districts. They went out and visited. I heard from two of my school board members about this bill, about the experience that they had in your part of the world, Representative Dallum, and the shared experience that they see themselves having with these districts that are very different but share some of the same challenges. And I think we should be looking for more of those kinds of opportunities to bring Oregon together. So I'm really glad to see this bill move forward. I hope it does.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. Representative Minnis.
If I may, I think Vicki Phillips has done an extraordinary job as the superintendent of Clinton Public Schools, and I know that she spearheaded this effort. When she comes to Salem and asks rural legislators to help their school district, I think it's encouraging to see her make an effort to go out and connect with rural Oregon and be helpful to them. So I applaud their efforts.
Thank you. Well said and appreciated by many of us, I'm sure. Any other comments?
I might finish with one that with the relationships we've established, we do have a kinship. And I think you'll see us working for the betterment of Oregon education hand in hand, far more than we have in the past.
Well, thank you, committee. Representative Wisden, I think you were informed that we're on House Bill 2885.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
He was informed to vote yes.
Well, I thought that was taken care of, but I know he knows his own mind and will do what he sees best. With no other questions or comments, would the clerk take the call the roll, please?
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative
Zala?
Aye.
Representative
Wisman?
Aye.
Representative Wisman? Aye. House Bill 2885 is moved, is passed as presented, and we'll move to the full committee. Representative Dahlin, will you explain this to the
Absolutely.
Full committee?
Absolutely. We're very proud to do that.
Good job. I close the hearing, the work session on House Bill 2885, and I'm opening the public hearing and work session on 3309. Okay. Well, I'm going to have Representative Olson give us some background. We're waiting.
He elected him again.
we're waiting for Representative Clem to come, and we might have to take just a short recess or a break, but let's get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3309 and House Bill 3310 are both bills.
3310.
They're both bills from Representative Clem. I don't know if you'd want to just, you might have to. I can explain the first one and then we can do. House Bill 3309 creates a SWAT team for Oregon's future task force, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. The House Bill 3309, just a little bit the background, it is a six-member task force. And the purpose of the task force, according to the bill, is to, quote, identify methods to persuade Oregon's brightest high school graduates to attend college, live, and work in Oregon, unquote. And the bill goes into a little more detail on that. There's a dash one amendment before you that would clarify that it's the Department of Education that will be the department providing staff support to the task force. In the moment, the only person we have signed up to speak on this bill is Representative Clem.
Okay. While we have a moment, and maybe I should know this, but what does SWAT stand for?
SWAT.
Anything beyond that?
Madam Chairwoman, in the police, it's Special Weapons and Tactics, I believe. But it is not spelled out in the bill.
It just stands for
SWAT. I think Representative Clem is designed to get the sense of urgency, is my sense.
Special words and techniques.
Attitude training. I don't know. academic training. Andy, do we have kind of a timeline? Okay. Well, just. I will open the hearing on 3310, and we'll get that explanation. So, with that, I open a public hearing and possible work session for House Bill 3310.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3310 allows the Department of Education to establish Mentoring Oregon's Talented and Gifted, MOTAG, program to provide mentoring and resources that help talented and gifted students access education and training beyond high school. It establishes the Mentoring Oregon Talented and Gifted Program Fund, continuously appropriates money in the fund to the Department of Education for the program, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. There's a dash one amendment to this bill that would delete placing appropriated language in the fund, but continue to allow money from donations and grants to be placed in the fund. This is, again, based on the Ways and Means philosophical objection to appropriated money in funds that draw their own interest to the account. This, again, the bill has a little more details about mentoring. In my understanding, it is modeled somewhat on the Inspire program. And both 3310 and 3309 are sponsored by Representative Clem, who is now...
Now with us. Great. Did you have a question, Representative Buckley?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Clem? We have opened a public hearing on both 3309 and 3310, and we await your wonderful voice on what these are about. There is an addendum to that request. Use all the time you want today. Just make it short tomorrow.
I tried that yesterday. Actually.
I didn't see you try that hard.
it was the questions.
I will vouch for you, Richard.
Three school principals are giving you a C-.
So I was looking at my sponsorship list, and this time, now, Representative Minnis must, well, you're not on
the school. Could we have your name for the record?
Sorry, Brian Clem, state rep from Salem here. And this time I got Representative Wisnett on them, but I forgot Cannon on one. Otherwise, you're all on most of them except, and I guess because I didn't know you were going to be on this sub, I didn't pay attention. I'm very sorry.
Madam Chair, I think Representative Clem should know that does not mean I'm necessarily voting for these votes. I do not commit my vote.
Interesting strategy. Yeah. But no point taken. Okay, so 09. Now, where these came from, we had hearings in the full education committee, I think it was, and there were a lot of talented and gifted students' parents talking about how the state really doesn't do much of anything in their view for them, and the school districts often don't do anything for them in their view because of funding or lack of priorities, and they had been asking about things we could do to help. And one of the things that they requested, I think, was a position at the Department of Education, and that's moving elsewhere in the process somewhere, I know. But my chair... Representative Buckley of the full education said after the testimony was over, one of the ideas that came forth was a mentoring program. And the Aspire program, which as some of you know, is the program where there's a coordinator in the high school to help bring in volunteer mentors to help people think about going to college. And we thought, well, maybe we could use the same model to have somebody come in and help the talented and gifted students so they don't get bored and drop out because they have someone who's thinking a little more about their needs and a teacher than the teacher can because they're already in this huge, busy environment. And we had a gentleman here. One of my constituents who happened to be in the room, and he had said, I've been teaching for 40-some years, and I would love to give some of my volunteer time mentoring. I thought, well, maybe there's an angle. So we had the bill drawn up, and this is the product of it. That's MOTAG, M-O-T-O-G, Mentoring Oregon's Talented and Gifted. That's 3310. And the idea, again, is you bring in mentors who want to volunteer and work with talented and gifted students to try and reduce the dropout rate because they get bored and drop out of school or cause other problems because they're bored. So that's that one. 3309 was the other idea that I've had this for some time, thinking about how do you stop the brain drain in Oregon where people of really high achieving on their SATs or grades get recruited out of state by prestigious institutions. And it's going to be difficult to stop that in all cases because Harvard and other things, or as our Rhodes Scholar over there, Representative Cannon, knows, there are fine institutions outside of the state of Oregon. But what we saw in Georgia was if you throw a ton of money at the situation, a higher percentage of your plus 1,500 plus SAT earners will stay. And I thought, we can't really afford, though, to throw, it's hundreds of millions of dollars that they put into a student aid program, and that's one of the byproducts. And I thought, no, we're doing the right thing with the shared responsibility model and the opportunity grant, which is very efficient at need and So I thought, well, what else could we do? And this was, you know, the best shot I could think of, which is you take some of our key people in Oregon, governor or designee, superintendent of public instruction or designee, exec director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, community colleges, chancellor, independent colleges, and they've got this task force that tries to identify methods to keep those folks here. And these people obviously already exist. They're already being paid by the state, so we don't have to pay them any more money. We just ask them to come to a room and talk about this idea. And the premise behind it for me was, we'll send a basketball coach and a bunch of scholarship offers down to recruit a great high school student from anywhere in the country. Why can't we figure out ways to sit on the couch of a really high-achieving, academic, talented, and gifted student and say, here's the scholarship package that we know about, and we look at what they're eligible for. We make a package, and someone of really high profile goes down and recruits them just like we would a basketball player. And that was the basic premise. Now, this task force may come up with other ideas, but Oregon's future is sort of on the line. The legislative council wasn't so sure we actually wanted to call it SWAT, and they wrote me back and said, do you really want to call it that? So, you know, that's up for discussion. There's another terminology, SWOT, where it's SWOT, which stands for Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, Threats. And I thought if it's too militaristic for you, you could switch it over to that. Anyway, that's the basic bill and where it came from. And that's all I got.
Okay. And you're going to give us your written testimony?
Yeah. I've never done a moment of written testimony in my career.
It's time to learn how to write. But I would request written testimony. It'd be easier when we take it to the full to have...
All right. Transcribe. All of my staff transcribed.
That's good.
Madam Chair?
That is the request of this committee. Uh-huh. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, thank you for taking on the tasks. And after the testimony that we had in the full committee, it was very compelling testimony. And I think the ideas that you brought forward are ones that take steps in the direction of actually addressing the needs of this tremendously vital resource for us. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Questions for Representative Klim? Representative Dolan?
Oregon schools will attract talent. SWAT.
There you go.
Schools will attract talent.
Amendment.
We're getting very innovative today. Representative Wilson.
SWAT. Huh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Buckland, thanks for bringing these forward. Madam Chair, I see that both of these are referral to Ways and Means, but has that been changed now since we took the appropriations out, or both?
Mr. Olson?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, that's an excellent question on the appropriations. I saw that as a problem and zapped it before Ways and Means called me, because they've called me on other ones. So I can check before it goes to the
full committee.
Now and tomorrow I'll check and see if we can rescind it. I don't know if I don't have any fiscal data yet on either of these bills.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
And Madam Chair, thanks for hearing. I think, you know, the committee or the public hearing we had on TAG, I think, was energetic, and, you know, one of the few times in this building I guess I get applauded, so I want to put that on the record again. I did bring up two TAG bills, and I thought we were going to look at these and see if we could create one bill or something to address it. I do know in the budget that we've added additional person in the
right.
Department of Education. Is there other plans for how we're going to address the TAG? Is we're going to look at all these bills? Or
perhaps Mr. Olson, there are Senate bills addressing TAG. When we met with Senator Walker at the start of the session, her request was that her committee wanted to take lead on TAG programs. These are ideas that were separate from where the Senate committee was, and I don't have the most up-to-date information on where the Senate bills are concerning how to get this.
But it just to clarify, too, because I have spoken directly with Senator Walker to reassure myself that, indeed, they are working TAG bills, and we'll be hearing those in May. And do you have background on those ones?
I might. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wisnett, there are Senate Bill 312 and Senate Bill 622. Right offhand, I'm not sure which is the one they're pursuing or if it's both. My understanding from watching the hearings was they were not going to pursue the one on mandatory reporting, but we're going to pursue the one that would add an FTE and give more resources to the Department of Education. But that's my I would have to double check on that.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Because both of my bills came from TAG advocates, and one was from the TAG. One was outlined their entire program, which I realize may not be possible, but I'm not. It was provided by the advocate group for TAG that listed what they wanted. Remember, we talked about contact time between TAG students, talked about special training for teachers so they could knew how to handle these students and get the most out of them and help them with their future.
What I would commit to, Representative, is I will follow up with what is definitely happening in the Senate. I also take and review your bills, and then that we can have a discussion maybe separately outside of committee and see if we possibly, if we want to bring some amendments when the Senate bills come over, so I could talk to Senator Walker about that here within the next week.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Cannon? I have a question for Representative Clem, and it's perhaps a heretical question, but I'm going to risk asking it anyway, and that is, I wonder what the value is in your mind of keeping Oregon's brightest students to go to college in the state of Oregon. We're blessed here with wonderful, it's a wonderful place to live, and I think many of Oregon's students, bright students who leave the state for college, come back to the state to work. I put that out there as a hypothesis. I don't know how true it is, but in my experience, it's true for many. And they would undoubtedly value the experience that they've had in other parts of the country or other parts in the world and think that it's, adds to what they bring back to this state after their college experience.
Thank you, Representative Cannon. I will take up your question about your own bills. I think that you actually bring up a good point. Well, obviously, first of all, it's voluntary, so they're going to go if they want to go anyway, regardless of the enticements. But to the question of enticements, I know that there are studies that I reviewed many times at the Student Assistance Commission about the number of people who, when they stay in state to go to school, stay in state to work. And it's much higher than people who go out of state and then come back. And I like to incubate our own people. We've got a variety of other bills with youth mentoring and entrepreneurship along these same lines, where I want to work the percentages where the next Bill Gates or the next Amy's Kitchen, that those folks went to higher ed in Oregon, because I just know statistically they're more likely to stay here and create their companies here. It's not to guarantee it. My brother went to Oregon State. He then left the state, worked at Amazon.com, Weyerhaeuser Corporate, and he's there for life in Washington and doing well, and I'm happy for him, but I would have liked to have him here. So the college doesn't guarantee it. The other thing that we did talk a little bit, some of my staff and I, about the SWAT, and I do think part of their mission is to even take the people who are off at Oxford or Harvard and actually try and think about how to talk to them while they're there about coming back. So even if they do leave the state, let's be in touch with them while they're gone and figure out how do we get you to come back to Oregon. So, kind of cover both things, because your point is a fair one.
Any other questions or comments? I just have one, Representative Clem, and there's an organization that is a federal program, but it's very well immersed in some of our middle schools today already in Oregon, called Gear Up.
Gear Up, yeah.
I would see them as an incredible partner, because the components you're talking about right here are the components of Gear Up. It's a six-year program. If students are part of Gear Up, then they're guaranteed some scholarship money from the federal government, and parents are involved, and they have the whole mentoring project with that. I don't know. I wouldn't say you need to have them as listed in the part of the SWAT team, but...
Well, there are two. That's a great point. Gear Up, Waldo's a Gear Up school here in Salem. Mm-hmm. And OSAC and the OUS, which are both on here, are the two Gear Up co-grant writers. So the Gear Up is on here between those two.
Because that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, excellent point, and you're right. And it is a great program.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. I hope, Representative Cannon, you can vote to help Oregon's future.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Clem. With that, I think I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3309 and open up a work session on House Bill 3309. Committee, what's your desires? Representative Roebling, calling you Representative Dolan.
I'll begin with I move the amendment, dash one amendments to House Bill 3309.
There is a motion to move the amendments to House Bill 3309. Questions, concerns?
Madam Chair, I would suggest that, I mean, I would be more comfortable, I will vote yes on this, but I would vote the amendment. Sorry, we're talking about the amendment now.
Just the amendment.
Sorry, I hold off my comment.
Okay.
I have nothing
Seeing
to say.
Seeing no objection, the dash one amendments are in. Representative Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 3309 to the full Committee on Education with a... Is this going to go to Ways and Means?
No. He's checking okay. on the Ways and
Means
part.
Do pass as amended.
Okay. There is a motion on to move House Bill 3309 to the full committee as amended. Comments, Representative Cannon.
I feel more comfortable with the acronym spelled out along the lines of what Representative Dallin suggested. That's my comment. So I, you know, it's in your hands now, or will be in your hands in the full education committee, and that would be my my hope.
Any other thoughts? Would we need an amendment for that?
We would, and I think it should actually say OSWAT mm-hmm. for Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, school. Mm-hmm. I'm going down there.
So you can write it up.
Well, I was going to say.
We won't have it by tomorrow. Though.
No, we wouldn't have
it's
it by
just,
tomorrow.
Maybe.
Cindy might.
Cindy might.
We could
I'll go down there right afterwards and try and have it for tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank I'm going down anyway.
Thank you, Representative.
I think that's awesome. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I go on record. I don't like the title. So I hope we can come up with a change. I don't think that.
And you're okay with the suggestion Representative Dolan had? Has?
Rick says.
I might. That's.
Otherwise. We could do a work group for the two of you for an amendment by tomorrow so you could talk about it down the hallway.
I'll
come with you, Jane. We'll go hand in hand. It'll be sweet.
I'll defer to Representative Dallin's decision.
But you might give him a suggestion or two.
I've done that in the past.
Oh.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I mean, it seems trivial, but I mean, I'm thinking about people who are actually on SWAT teams. I think
I
that there's some reason to be a little bit careful here, and you can imagine it going to the floor and questions. I think we should be, if we're going to use this acronym, then we should at least spell it out. And I'm not sure that even does enough to sort of take care of Representative Wisnitz and my concerns on that. So maybe get rid of it. I don't know. So either way.
Just cross the word SWAT out. I think the bill reads the same.
Yep.
Boy, that was a fine acronym. Now it's gone.
I'd be comfortable just removing the word SWAT and just the team for Oregon's future.
Yep.
It's fine. Final team.
Yep.
So how do we do that?
He's going to take it down.
Mr. Olson.
Same thing.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I think if Representative Dallin says he's already going to talk on 2085, especially if we're just deleting a word, I think it should be no problem. And my sense is that Representative Clem would not have a problem with that.
He said this.
Okay.
The bill is what's important.
Thank you, Representative Dolan and Cannon and Wisnett, for your astute leadership on that, because I concur it might cause some confusion or just we want to be real clear.
And the sponsorship by Representative Cannon wasn't had nothing to do with the title.
On that note, any other comments? Otherwise, I'll have the clerk call the roll.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Cannon. Aye.
Representative
Dolan.
Aye.
Representative
Roebling.
Aye.
Representative
Roebling.
Aye.
Chair Hawk.
Aye. House Bill 3309 is adopted?
Motion carries.
Motion carries. Thank you. I lost the words all of a sudden. And will be moved to the full committee.
We need to close that one. And
yeah.
Close the other one.
Going to close House Bill 3309 and open a work session on House Bill. What? Oh, I didn't close the public hearing on 3310 yet? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on 3310. Now I could open the work session on public on House Bill 3310. Thank you. Representative Dahlem.
Thank you.
Oh. I need that.
Yes.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3310.
I'm going to take a breath before I repeat. There is a motion to move the amendments into House Bill 3310. Comments? Objections? So moved. Representative Roblin,
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Present us with a motion.
I move House Bill 3310 to the Education Committee with the due pass as amended recommendation.
There is a motion to move House Bill 3310 as amended to the full committee. Discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative
Humphrey? Aye.
Representative
Cannon?
Aye.
Representative
Minnick?
Aye.
Aye.
So moved, House Bill 3310. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 3310. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3335. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3335 allows students to attend a school in a school district in which the student does not live if certain requirements are met. It directs that student is considered a resident for the purposes of calculation of state school fund grant. Allows the school district to be reimbursed for a percentage of transportation costs associated with a student. Declares an emergency. It's effective July 1st, 2007. This bill has no subsequent referral. It is the sponsor is Representative Gelser, who's in another committee meeting. We're moving faster than I thought, so it's all right. No, that's great, but I will need to go get the sponsor. If you excuse me a minute, Madam Chair.
Okay, we'll stand at ease, please. going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3335, and we have with us Representative Gelser. If you'd go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Comp. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state representative from House District 16, which is Corvallis, Philomath, and two people living in Linn County. House Bill 3335, I introduced at the request of some families who live in my, actually they're not in my legislative district, they live in my school district. We, like many school districts, I served on the Corvallis School Board for about 5 years. And like most school districts across the state, particularly those with declining enrollment, we were faced with making some very difficult choices in order to meet our obligations to provide a quality education to students. In Corvallis, that included the closure of 5 schools. Since I went on to the school board. One of those schools, which closed as of this fall, was a school that I think you've had an advocate here testifying to you about. It was called Innovale School. It was a very small school in a rural environment, and we simply could not afford to maintain that school because the enrollment was too small and the economy of scale, we couldn't keep it open. We looked at the school in terms of being eligible for the rural school grant. It seemed like it would be because it was pretty far away from our other schools within our school district. It was greater than, I believe it's an 8-mile limit. It was about 9 miles away from the closest school in our school district. However, it was a tenth of a mile under the limit close to a school in a neighboring school district. So for families that lived in this rural area whose school was closed, they were now many miles away from our school district, even though there were school buildings in neighboring school districts that were closer to them. So what this bill basically would do is allow those families to be able to attend the school that was closest to them in a rural area and not have to shoulder the burden of transportation to that other school. So what this bill says is that if the school at your grade level in the school district to which you are assigned is greater than 15 miles away from your home, but there's another school building in a neighboring school district or another school district that's less than 10 miles away, the student can attend that school district to which they are closer, that closer school, and that receiving school district would, for transportation purposes, treat that student in exactly the same way they would their other students. And they would receive the student's ADMW when they moved over as if they were a resident of their school district. The reason for this, although school districts already can do interdistrict transfers, where I live, people do that fairly freely. They're fairly open borders. The transportation issue can be challenging, and for families that are living in very rural areas, this can be difficult, and I realize that some of you would take exception to me calling anything near Corvallis an extremely rural area, so I would rephrase that as a rural area, rural Benton County, and I'm sure that this would impact students in other parts of the state who live in more rural kinds of environments. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Before we go any further, and Representative Gelser, you usually always do come prepared with written testimony because this might have an impact on another bill that we just heard. If you could have written testimony written up for us so we have it in our files, it'd be appreciated.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I will write that up and get it to you by Monday, by your next meeting.
Okay.
That's okay.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Gelser? Representative Dahl?
Yes, Representative Gelser. When the school closure took place and the out-of-district school, was there contact between the out-of-district school and the Corvallis district, and did they talk about an attendance agreement?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Dellum. I am not certain of the answer to that question, and I think that the issue impacted the Corvallis School District and the Philomath School District, which are the closest. That's the school to which Annabelle School was closest to. It was a fairly porous back-and-forth agreement. My understanding from some of these more rural families, it was further away school districts, closer to Monroe and other areas in the district. So in my school district, this impacted people that were living in more southern parts of Benton County.
But you don't know then if the Monroe School was contacted in the if there wasn't some effort to resolve this issue at the local level?
Madam Chair, Representative Dallin, I do not know that. My constituent came to me and I said I'd be happy to put in the bill to have the discussion about how to handle these, because we're continuing to close these very small rural schools. I have another bill that I've put in. I don't know if that's before your committee or before our revenue committee, that talks about that rural school formula, because in some of these rural areas it is happening that the school that is far away from other schools in its district is falling right below that cutoff for a school in a neighboring school district, and we've seen several of these small rural schools close, which is a real loss to our community in the state of Oregon, these small rural schools.
Representative Dolan. Did it twice. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry for everybody's listening.
We look like each other.
I guess that's it.
I can't tell you apart.
I have concerns about the bill in the sense that, you know, this may work well in places like rural Benton County or whatever, but in some of our areas, I can tell you that if you're talking 10 miles, this student may want to go to the school that's next door to ours, but it's going to cost him 50 miles of roads to get there, and he's going to have to go through the other school district to get back to get over there. But he's only 5 miles away from that school. Just have to go over this little hill, and you're right there. So the districts are really large, and this 5 and 10 mile thing can be different. And so all of a sudden you have another district that has to pay transportation to go through the other district to get him over to the other, but he was within the radius. So I'm concerned about how it's read and this transportation cost. The other part that concerns me is if you had a pocket of people like your school district and they did that, and they all moved, and this is kind of the question, and they all said, oh, we'd like to go over there.
Yeah.
So they go over there as a block. They're not paying school taxes to that other district. There's no relationship with that one. There's now no relationship with the district they're in. Therefore, there's no reason for them to vote for any of the kinds of things that schools do. There's no relationship to the district that they live in. And that frustrates me a little bit with respect to this, the way we fund schools and the way we fund extra kinds of things in schools that require the people in the school district to vote for it. And so how would you address that kind of thing? I just am concerned about that.
Chair Comp Representative Roblin, I had not thought about that, though I have to say, because it's an opportunity to say it in a public place, when you talked about the connection between the local tax base and the public schools, I am frustrated with the way that our tax system works for the funding of public schools, because there is a disconnect between what local taxpayers are doing and what happens in their local school districts. Some school districts, despite having lower property tax rates, receive the benefit of school districts like mine that are paying higher property tax rates. So for our school district, when we go out and ask for a local operating levy, and many people are still very confused about the difference between a bond, a capital construction levy, and a operating levy, which we're very limited to go out for, they look at their property tax bill and say, gosh, I'm paying all of these property taxes and I don't see these services in my schools. Well, in my school district, those dollars aren't staying in our schools. They're getting shipped to other parts of the state. So I think that inequity and that disconnect between what people are paying for in their property taxes and how that works in their local public schools has really been disrupted by Measure 5, and I certainly would support any efforts to go back to some local control and local funding where we're providing a basic safety net across the state to ensure that every child has access to an adequate education, but for those communities that wish to do more, they have the ability to do that at the ballot box, and they do see that direct connection between their activities as voters and what they're doing in their schools.
Right. Representative Roblin.
A follow-up on this. Here's the other problem I have. Now, and I don't know how you're reimbursing this travel expense back and forth, if it's going directly to the person, which is something I don't think we've ever done, but if you're expecting the other school district to go pick up those, and you've got my district going out there and picking up the same ones, we're going to see the same problem that we have in this other district, buses passing each other, going to two different school districts, picking up kids, which is not an efficient way to run a bus system. So how would you address that? How are you expecting this transportation to work?
Thank you, Chair Comp, Representative Roblin. Again, an excellent question. I think the way that I had pictured this, because you have to be greater than 15 miles away from, since the discrepancy is greater, you have to be closer than you are far from the other district. I hadn't pictured this idea of being able to drive to that other place in a shorter period of time. I'd imagined the reimbursement happening in the same way we reimburse for other transportation. So the kid just becomes a portion of that school district.
This is a clarification. In the sense, I'm saying we have three families out here. This family decides it wants to go to this district. This one wants to stay in the same district that they're in, because they know as soon as they go to the high school, they have to go back to the other school, because it's closer in this district than the other high school would be. So I've got my buses from School District A going out there and picking up this family, and I got School District B coming out to the same place and picking up B, all of a sudden making it more expensive for both school districts. Any answer?
Chair Comp, Representative Riblin, my only answer is that you are very wise. And I hope to you for guidance on these issues.
I concur, Representative Gallagher. There isn't much that he or Representative Dahlem haven't figured out and experienced, so they're still my mentors, too. So.
And Chair Comp, if I may, anyone that brings chocolate on Friday afternoons deserves extra deference.
That was a strategy somebody taught him a long time ago that works fabulously. Any other questions for Representative Gelser? I'm sure we must have pulled you out of another committee.
Well, it was a pleasure to come. Thank you for hearing the bill and giving me the ability to go back to my former constituents in my school district to share with them some of the thoughts that were shared here today.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Okay, that is the only person that has signed up for this bill, and at this time, I believe what I'm going to do is just close the public hearing on House Bill 3335, and that we may or may not move that to a work session sometime in the future. With that,
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
Does this mean we don't get to question Mr. Reeder's wisdom or check his mind?
We have to accept Mr. Reeder's wisdom as a given.
We know that if we would have asked him anything about transportation.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I believe because Representative Kremel wants to come and speak to House Bill 2606, we'll give him time to arrive, that we'll just skip over that one just temporarily and move to House Bill 3178, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3178.
Madam Chair, just clarification, would you like us to contact Representative?
Would you please?
Yes. Thank you.
And if you would give us a summary on House Bill 3178.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3178, which the committee last heard on April 3rd, directs school districts, education service districts, and public bodies to make available to the public lists of vacant and unused buildings and portions of buildings that may be suitable for the operation of public charter schools. Directs that lists be provided to developing or operating public charter schools within 30 days of a written request. Excuse me, there's a dash one amendment before the committee that clarifies that one need only have an approved charter proposal to be eligible for what the bill talks about. So that's a clarifying amendment if the committee should choose to adopt it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other background from the sponsors of the bill? Representative Dahlem or Representative Roblin?
I think we testified on it once.
Okay. Seems pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Motion on the amendments. Representative Roblin?
Just want to make sure you got it right this time. So I'm giving you a chance.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3178.
There's a motion to move the dash one amendments into House Bill 3178. Any questions? Concerns? So moved. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 3178 to the Education Committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. We now have a motion before the committee on House Bill 3178 as amended. Discussion. Seeing no further questions or discussion on House Bill 3178, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Excused.
Representative Dahlem?
Aye.
Representative Minnis?
Aye.
House Bill 312078 is accepted and will be moved to the full committee. Who wants to speak on that to the full committee?
I can pick them.
Representative Roblin, thank you so much.
That's right.
Thank you. Seems like we're moving along at a fast clip.
We are focused.
Okay. Our presenter has perfect timing. I'm going to. Did I close the hearing on the work session?
No.
Okay, thank you. I didn't think so. I closed the work session on House Bill 3178, and I'm opening the work session on House Bill 2885. 2606? Yes, it is 2606. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2885 and open the work session on House Bill 2606.
Madam Chair, should I?
Yes, Mr. Olson, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2606 modifies certain educational class requirements from years to credits, allows students to graduate in less than 4 years or advance the next grade level if the student meets credit requirements for classes, applies to students who meet requirements on or after the effective date of the act, modifies the requirement for children who must attend public schools, applies to 2007-2008 school year, declares emergency effective July 1st, 2007. The committee has before it two amendments. One, clarifies that the early graduation or early grade advancement would only be at the request of the student, with parent guardian consent, except for emancipated students or students 18 years of age or older. That's the dash one. The dash two would clarify that local school district requirements, in addition to State Board of Education requirements, must be met. A clarifying note for the committee, the committee's already passed out two bills that deal with similar aspects of the law on this issue, House Bill 2263, dealing with abolishing the SIMCAM, and House Bill 2848 on alternative diplomas. And those two bills and this one are all headed to, if they were to all head to the Senate, would possibly necessitate a conflict amendment on the Senate side. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Minnis.
Perhaps I missed it. Could you explain what the conflict is again?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Minnis. All three bills, House Bill 2263, House Bill 2606, this bill, and House Bill 2848, amend a similar part of ORS 329.451, which is the part of the law that clarifies how many credits are required for graduation. And so some aspects they amend are virtually the same languages, others maybe slightly different. And so we've already alerted the chair of the Senate Education Committee that they might need to work with legislative counsel to make sure there weren't any conflicts in the ultimate version, should they all go out of the Senate Education Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Minnis.
I think we'll have Representative Crummell talk to the bill, and then I know I have a couple of questions to make sure we're not in conflict, but Representative Crummell, would you please present your thoughts on this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26, Wilsonville, Sherwood, and over to Gaston. House Bill 2606 with the dash one amendments, to be quite blunt, would be my preference. The reason being that it aligns with the state standard, and it's keeping with where we were in the other bills that Mr. Olson mentioned with regards to 24 credits for graduation at the state as a state standard. And basically then what this does is it just states that if a student has finished the number of credits early, and if they make the request that they would want to be able to graduate early, that the school district would go ahead and let them graduate. In the previous conversations, there was some discussion relative to the school district standards. We did some research on this, and what we found is that a lot of the school districts, when they have what would appear to be different standards, really aren't different standards. And the reason that they're not is because in many cases they are multiple. Currently, under the state standard, it takes 22 credits to graduate. A lot of the school districts, their standards are a multiple of 22. So we have one district, for example, that required 44 credits, another district that required 66 credits. And what I think is happening in those particular cases is that the district is taking, for example, they're on the one that requires 66 credits. They are on a trimester basis, and so they're probably allowing one credit per each term. For example, a social studies credit, they might say that you need to have 3 credits in 1 year, but they're getting those 3 credits each, or get 1 credit each trimester. So without belaboring that, the one area that I think is interesting is that there are some districts that require a certain amount of community service. And I think that's very laudable. However, in the state standards, there are also electives. And within those electives, I think, is where the flexibility for a school district. So if the district said, look, you have to do 50 hours of community service, and it falls under this class list is the one, and this is the credit that you're going to get for it, and it's in this elective. The student would still be able to meet that school standard while meeting the state requirement of what's going to be soon 24 credits, or I think is going to soon be 24 credits. So we have that issue. The other issue becomes one of transferability. We know that there's a certain segment of the population, and it can be anybody, so I'm not trying to point anyone out in particular, but that in any given school year, you could have as much as 10% of your school's population move. They move out of your district, they move into your district. I mean, there's that kind of fluctuation. So a student that is in Wilsonville High School, for example, now may transfer to Woodburn High School, or may transfer to Ashland High School, or Gresham High. And having the ability to know what their credits are is extremely important. So that's why I guess I'm trying to make the case for the -1 amendments as opposed to the -1 and the -2. They're not exclusive of each other. What I'm trying to say is that you can adopt both amendments if that's the desire of the committee. My own personal desire would be that the -1s be adopted, because that gets to the issue that was raised by the superintendent from SIO and some of the other folks that I think are sitting behind me relative to the PACE programs and that sort of thing, where a student is taking classes at a community college while they're still finishing their high school diploma, and the student being able to continue that. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Crummel. Representative Wisnett?
Madam Chair, thank you. We're in work session.
Yes,
right?
We are in work session.
I'm not sure that -2 fits in there, because that would destroy what we're trying to do here. We're not, because what's, you know, we're, I think that if we're saying the person can graduate if they've met the state requirements, not the school districts. I mean, it seems like I'd have to support Representative Crummel.
I'm sure if I respond.
Go ahead,
to that,
please.
Representative Wisnett, in my school district, for instance, Nash School District, we do have specific things that the district, you know, feels very strongly about, community education being one of them, and the senior project, the way the senior project is developed is very important to our school district. So my superintendent was very, very supportive of the bill itself and of -1, but would love to be able to still have district requirements beyond the state requirements for graduates from the high school in our district. And so that's really what it comes down to. And I was interested if I could ask my colleagues who have serve in these positions. How do you handle, Representative Crum brings up a very good point, a student that transfers into your school, say at the end of a junior year or sort of a senior year, how do you handle that, the difference in the requirements between the district they're coming from and your district?
I'll take a shot at it first. When a student comes into the district, you compare, you put what they have against what we have, and if you're creating an undue hardship and going to say to that student, sorry, it'll take you 5 years, that's just not done. You either amend your requirements or allow them to substitute something they've taken, but I know of no school that says you'll have to meet our requirements or you can't have our diploma. If there is one, Arnie and I are just talking about that. But that's how we would have handled it in any school I served in.
Okay. I do know that there are school districts who, when you go in, the school district rule is you have to graduate with our graduate requirements. That's it. So I do know there are some, because I've had to deal with that with some of our kids who have transferred to some. Most of them have been out of the state, so that's a different situation. But I would tell our district's belief was we call the other school district and find out if they were on track to graduate at that district first. Were they on track? Because sometimes kids will come and say, I was ready to graduate. And then you call the district and say, no, they were about a year and a half out. And you say, okay.
A little bit.
So then you say, okay, no, that wasn't quite what your school district said you were at. So we check with them first. And then we look and say, okay, if they take these things at ours, will they meet ours? Because our district requirements used to be a little higher than the state's requirements as well. And we would work it out for that person so that they could take courses there to meet the requirements, and if we had to, we'd go to the school board, and the school board has some discretion over that as long as you're meeting state requirements. And the boards that we work with were always willing to work with that zone. The other thing that we did in a few cases, when we thought it was going to be a real stretch, we would contact the other school, and we would contact that student and say, the school says if you take these courses here, they will give you the diploma, especially if they were senior. And so then we would transfer our transcript to them saying they have completed these deals and their actual diploma would come from the other school. And many of the students wanted that because they wanted to graduate from their own school as opposed to their own. So, I mean, it's the new one that they came to. So I know from my personal experiences there was always a way to try to work with those students that got transferred in to help them meet the requirements that they were going to need to graduate if they were on track to graduate from the previous school that they left from. And one of the places that was difficult with that, when you had a 6-period day in some and an 8-period in the other, they might need a whole lot more credits at that 8-period than they're ever going to be able to get at a 6-period school. So you have to figure that. I mean, we have a real belief in our state about local control. And with that comes a lot of different ways in which graduation requirements are met in the state. I think we talked earlier about trimesters and whether you count each trimester as a credit or, as the state does it, a full year course is one credit. And I will tell you that in our school district, because I was the math person, my registrar and other people would come in and say, could you work these math out so that you could get the corresponding relationship between what these credits are with respect to ours? Because we were one that said we were on a semester and each semester was one. And so it was kind of like, this is ours is really two, right? And I said, we are two. The state would call that one. And this is three, and the state would call it one. And so
who would call it two?
So how do you work those out? And so it got fairly complex at times to figure out what the corresponding credits were. But I still believe that individual school districts, in my opinion, should have the right to set some of those requirements and base those things on their own. And I do like the dash twos. I think that individual school districts working with their kids and families and whatever should be able to do that. I would hope that they would make the corresponding deals. But like Representative Dahlem, I don't know of any. I can't think of many school districts in our state that were ever a problem that way. There were. I know of a few different times when we had some kids that had a real difficult time on both ends of that. But I
guess I'm going to ask, if I may, Madam Chair, a yes. question for Representative Crummel.
Yes, and then Representative Wisnett, you're after that.
Do you know of any schools that have held a student captive to their school requirements when they have met the state requirements? Are there some?
I am, Madam Chair and Representative Dahlem, I am not aware of any cases where a school district has held a student captive. From a standpoint, they may have made the process very arduous. For example, Westland Wilsonville, and you heard from former Representative Miller's and Senator Miller's daughter a few weeks ago on that issue. The process was pretty arduous to go through to be able to graduate early. My only fear is that I don't want the districts to say, okay, well, we have license now to sort of play around with this, and we can make things difficult. So if we have a student that is accelerating through, by golly, we're going to make sure that seat time is. And I think the more that we, as a legislature, continue to cover seat time as opposed to anything else in terms of funding, that potentially becomes more of an issue. So I don't want the student to be facing a moving target is a real concern. And I think the other thing is we have a state standard. And generally in other parts of the statute, I think it already, you know, it alludes to the state statutes as opposed to the state and school district statutes. So
before we move to Representative Wisnett's question, I just want to remind the committee in our staff measure summary, in the last paragraph, it clearly states that what we're talking about is already in the law, that it is the requirements established by the State Board of Education and the school districts, and that's how it has been. Mr. Olson?
Madam Chair, perhaps I could share. Yes, before when I was looking at it appeared that it was just an Oregon administrative rules on the local district requirements. Upon further research, when I was trying to understand the possible conflict between the three bills that I mentioned, House Bill 2263, House Bill 2848, and House Bill 2606, talking with legislative counsel, she noted that Oregon Revised Statute 329.447 right now in the law currently states that, quote, at or before grade 12, a diploma shall be conferred upon all students completing the requirements established by the State Board of Education and the school districts, unquote. That's also something similar in Oregon Administrative Rule 581-022-11308A. Now, talking about that, House Bill 2263, because it changes around the references to Sim and Cam, this part I just quoted, it changes which section of the law it is, but my understanding is it still will remain in the law.
As stated,
yes. It just changes what section it's in because of some of the language being deleted with the SimCam references. It's rather confusing, but my understanding is it is currently in law. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Just a minute, Representative Rowe. Representative Wisnett, did you have a clarifying question? Or?
Well, I've got more questions now, Madam Chair.
Well, do you want to go ahead?
I still don't understand. I thought that I have no experience as a superintendent or a principal. I'm reading the rule and
right.
The intent of the bill. And then the bill says we want to be able to give a student, like we were testified in this committee of, a chance to graduate in less than 4 years. But now we're saying we're going to, wait a minute, back up. We're going to, they can't. If they meet the state requirements, you've got to meet the school district requirement, too. And we had example or testimony from one of the committee members of how they worked with the student and tried to help them do that.
Right.
But we're putting it back in law, and we have the chance to change that law.
That is what we're looking at as an option today to change that language. Go ahead.
Just one clarification. The two bills we've already passed already have something similar. And that's why I just wanted to mention the conflict amendment, not to cause confusion, but just there is already some language that went out of the committee. The commission could decide to adopt or not adopt, but there is some language that deals with this issue that has already gone out.
To say that a little different way, if we would move this bill with both amendments, then they would be in conflict with previous moved bills.
Madam Chair, actually, my understanding, and we could get legislative counsel we need to, is that if we moved it with both amendments, it would be consistent with the other bills.
But if we just moved it with the dash ones.
In any event, because the bills all amend similar sections of the law, they would need to be looked at legislative counsel to make sure that they weren't conflicting, because they all are slightly different, especially like when you get into the alternative diploma certificate issue.
Thank you. Representative Roebling?
It is my understanding, because of some of the things we have passed this year already, that if we put amendments 1 and 2 in, then we are doing nothing.
Okay.
But we already have it. I mean, I think
that's
that
correct. That's how
my belief is that the way we have, the way the law is now written, there is a requirement, if a parent were to ask, that if my parent, my child met the graduation requirements of the school district and met the graduations of the, and they got there early, they have to give them a diploma. There is no choice. That is my belief right now. They would have to do that as the way the statutes are currently written. So I'm not sure that we need the bill. If we put 1 and 2 in. If we don't put 2 in, then that's not true, because currently it says and means it's not an or statement, so it's not one or the other. It means you have to have the state requirements and the district requirements. So as I believe as the current statute is written and the stuff we've passed to this point, putting 1 and 2 together
would
mean we don't have to do anything.
It just makes it null. Comment that I would like to also add to the committee's knowledge is coming from a district where we have students that come from out of country. We have quite a sophisticated process in looking at international transcripts, and to the extent that we had meetings
That's
with
true.
Consulates of other countries' education departments to make sure that the credits. Well, that they say the same thing as what we're saying here in the United States. And so there would be a whole other layer of challenges if we just, you know, I don't know how parents and children would address some of those intimate challenges when you come from another country. If you just followed the state regs, maybe it would be easier. But I know that we have a process in our school district that students can petition at any time, and then if it's accepted by the administration in the actual school, then it's taken to the board for board action. And there's policies surrounding that we've been using for a number of years that works pretty doggone good. Representative Roebling.
So I want to thank our administrator for pointing out there is one part of this bill that is not addressed in current statute that is different, and that has to do with grade level. Moving from one grade level to the other. The state statute is pretty vacant on that one, in my opinion. And different school districts do it differently. Some districts, every year you are in school, you progress one. And so you stay at senior year, maybe a long time, because you don't have the credits, but that you're there. And others, you have to get certain credits before you move to the next level. So that part in this bill is a little different. I still think that means that's is irrelevant with respect, from my perspective.
Madam Chair, if we adopt the dash ones, I'm not sure that we really change the situation much with respect to the advancing grade level, since it simply gives the school district the authority, I assume they already have, to advance a student if the student meets the requirements. So, again, I think it may not do a lot.
Madam Chair, if I may jump in here, the school district may advance the student. What the dash ones do is that if the student requests, number one, if they've received all of the credits and they request to be graduated, the school district would be obligated to graduate them. If they are in a lower grade and the parent has made the request that a student be they're going through the third grade and the student is working ahead in all of their workbooks and basically finishes everything by March 1st. Instead of making that student sit there and mark time in the third grade, the parent could request to the school that student be allowed to move to the fourth grade, and the school would then need to look at that and potentially advance them. Now, the one problem that this does present in a bricks and mortar operation is that moving from third grade to fourth grade in the middle of the year, it creates potential gaps, and that's that's an issue that the schools would have to work out. In the kind of, in the type of environment in which I teach, that's really not an issue, because if a student that's in the third grade finishes their third grade materials by the end of January, it's really not a problem. We just send them their fourth grade materials and we move them right into the fourth grade. So from the standpoint of a virtual school or other schools that operate on more of a flex type of schedule, that's not, because you don't create the gap. In a normal bricks and mortar school, that could potentially be an issue, but I would also argue that many students, and I think the teacher colleagues on the panel here recognize too, that when you have a student that's accelerating like that, they probably are either getting outside tutoring or other help, so that gap really doesn't exist.
Committee, in order to help us gain a little direction here, do we have a motion on any of the amendments or the bill?
I want to make a comment.
Okay, please.
I am concerned about the mechanics of accelerating a student, but I guess I'm going to look for a school, and I remember having students that had finished state requirements long ago and far away and wanted to come to Reed College. And the argument wasn't whether they had the credits, it's whether they had the maturity, but we did let that student go. And I want to know, I just got into the locals' business.
Yeah.
Something I'm sworn not to do and continually do over diplomas. This morning, on the floor. If I knew that there was a school that was holding a student captive for the aid, for the money, I'd jump on this like a duck on a June bug. But I want to know that they're doing that. I think this bill has merit. I want those two issues straightened out. Could we revisit this? I don't want to table this and have it go away forever, but I would like to straighten out the moving a student forward as they've completed the work, which is not a problem in the school district where Mr. Crummell works, but it is in brick and mortar, and I'd like to know who's not advancing students, who's holding them captive for the bucks, because that's pretty... I won't work with him for very long, or her, or them.
Yeah.
If there is one, then I want Mr. Crummell's bill, and I want it badly.
Thank you for the recommendation, Representative Dahl. What I would share with you, our committee administrator and I met today earlier, and we looked at the bills that we have scheduled. And believe it or not, we're sticking to our timeline really well, and so we do have time if we want to close this hearing today with the knowledge that we're going to do a little more research. I think that's appropriate. I don't know if somebody wants to work along with Representative Crummell on
Representative
that.
Crummell.
Okay.
Representative Crummell.
Representative Crummell.
Honorable Representative Crummell.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I do support the bill -1.
Okay.
That's
the way.
Okay.
So we're good.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
if I may, I'll be glad to do a little more research and see if I can find actual cases where maybe there will be students that will come forward out there and say that they have been held back because of the money. I don't think that that's, one of the things that we're trying to do here is make it a little bit easier for the student, so that instead of arduous, if a school district can put in whatever rules they want to from a standpoint of saying, well, if you want to graduate early, you have to do this and do that and go before the board and so on and so forth, where a simple letter to the principal may suffice with this type of legislation. But I would be will be happy to do some more research and see if I can find absolute cases where a student has been held up. But I guess I would say, why not allow students to be able, and I'll also check with legislative council about whether or not the bill is even needed.
Thank you, because that was my next recommendation.
With the other two bills that have been, with the other bills that have been passed, and I can get back. That'll be kind of the easy part of the assignment.
Yeah. Right.
That's true.
And anyway.
Because that would be my recommendation, is to work with legislative council to make sure the language is compatible with the other bills or whatever needs to happen, so we have a real clean bill when it comes back. Mr. Olson?
Madam Chair, just one clarifying point I overspoke before. While my understanding is this, and I quoted the one part of law that is currently, while I think Representative Crummell is correct in that there's perhaps a different intent or thrust as far as the school district and the parent, and so there may be some difference in the language between the bill and what's currently in the law. But and maybe, as you were saying, legislative council could clarify mm-hmm. to what extent a difference exists.
Okay. Well, I thank the committee for a very provocative discussion, and I know I learned some things again today, which usually happens in this process. So with that, Representative Crummell, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2606. And we do have time, so I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 3179. As we transition, Mr. Olson, if you'll remind us when you get your papers put together, mm-hmm. as we also shift.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3179 changes information that the school district board may request from a public charter school applicant, changes the criteria for approving a public charter school proposal, specifies time periods for appeal of denial of public charter school and for State Board of Education review, allows the public charter school or sponsor to request State Board review of whether specified provisions have been violated, declares emergency effective July 1st, 2007. The committee has two amendments before it. The -1 amendment would add in statute the option of a conditional approval of public charter school proposal based on A, the requirement of federal and state law, and B, board policies that support the legislative intent and goals listed in ORS 338.015. This -1 would also give the Department of Education 150 days, buys 120 days in the original bill to complete its appeal review, and add that the appeal timeline could be changed if, quote, the applicant and the State Board of Education mutually agree to a different timeline, end quote. The -2 amendment does the same, except for does not have any language discussing a conditional approval. In other words, the -2 only has the language on 150 days by 120 days for the appeal timeline, and the adding the language about the applicant and State Board could mutually agree to a different timeline. So they are it's sort of a one or the other amendments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Roblin?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Comments?
Yes. I really want to see this bill worked, and I think there are parts of it, especially at the end with timelines, that make it better for everyone. I have some concerns were addressed to me that I do need to make sure that I understand completely, and they only have to do with, I think that there are certain things under which the school district has to retain total control of whether they're approving a charter school or not. And for me, that is, are they going to have a school here that has the curriculum and other things that they really believe that they need to have mm-hmm. to provide a good education for everybody? And I think that's the responsibility of the school district, singularly. I mean, it's going to be their school. Even when approved, they're still responsible for the education that goes on. So the only concern that I have happens to be on page 2, when we go from... And I am uptight with school districts that put too many requirements on. So that's the other part that makes it hard for me, because I think there are some that put unreasonable requests on some of the schools because they don't want it, and it won't work. So I'm looking at section, I guess it would be B, number 3. We went from require additional information to request additional information, and the issue there for me is if you just request it and they don't give it to you, and then you go down, we put some other requirements that it has to be required that it's meeting federal and state laws and board policies and so on and so forth. I like that part, but I get a little, I want to make sure that what we aren't doing is saying, I've come in and requested, I was denied, I come back and request again, and there's nothing the school board can do if they still haven't changed the underlying parts that have to do with curriculum. I think I'm okay, but I want to make sure on that one, and that was something that just came up. So that's, but I do want to work this bill because I think the timelines and the other stuff have been unworkable in the past. We've had things that have happened where nobody keeps working to make the thing happen. So I want some timelines there, but I need to check on that. And I feel bad for my other people, including John today. I feel bad for Karen Hackes, who's not here because she's talked to me, and I haven't had a chance to talk to her about that one. This is something that I want to make sure I'm clear on before I approve something. The only other option is if we went to the full and I had a chance to do that before then, I could live with that, but I'm a little nervous about that until I get that figured out.
Could I step back and ask a clarifying question of both you and Representative Dahl?
Absolutely.
Why did you feel this bill was necessary? What is it intended to help or support students?
Speed up the process, definite timelines, a clear order of things that were to be done. As I look at as a former school board member, I'm looking at Section 3, and when it says may request, I know as a school board member, I have a responsibility to see to it that the charter school that is putting forth the charter is going to educate those children. And I want to be sure that the school board gets the information it needs to make the decision on the charter in the timely manner that the bill prescribes. That never occurred to me. In fact, my colleague came in, and while everybody else was talking, I'm reading the bill. But that word does trouble me.
Mm-hmm.
The school board has to have information. The charter school can have carte blanche policy to educate the child, but the school board has to know that's happening. And so I want to look at this word.
Thank you, Representative Dahl. Representative Cannon?
Madam Chair, I have serious reservations about this bill, and I want to just bring them up, and then perhaps they can be addressed by Representative Dallum or Roblin. And that is the more substantive change that I think this bill makes, even than the Section 1 that you're looking at, and that is the fact that this bill would require the board to approve a charter proposal that meets the requirements of federal and state law, as well as the board policies, as well as policies that support legislative intent. It is really setting up, it's taking discretion away from the school board on whether or not to approve a charter school. And I am very concerned about that sort of erosion of connection between school boards and their voters. I think that we should be doing everything we can to empower school boards to make decisions that are in the interest of their communities. Communities have a chance to express that through their local elections. And I recognize that when we get into charter school law, we're back to this delicate balance. I mean, it was set up to be a pathway for sort of alternate types of schools when the school board wasn't really responding to the needs of the community. I support charter schools. But I think, and I think Representative Roblin spoke to this, although addressing a different point, I think we should be just very sensitive about diminishing that level of responsibility for school boards to be making the decisions about charter schools. So I could be persuaded otherwise, but I'm probably not able to move forward with a yes vote on this bill at this time.
Thank you for your comment, Representative. Seeing no other comments at this time, I'm hearing that we want to have some time to rework this bill and get some more information. Sure. Everybody okay with that at this time? Representative Wisnett, you okay with?
Well, my question, Madam Chair, thank you, would be, you know, did the charter school people work, know about Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments?
Yes. Yes, they did.
They did. But I will personally get a hold of school board association people and Karen Hikus and OEA and whoever else will want to be there.
Sit down
and see what we can make sure that this does what we think it does. I'll take that on.
I really thank you. I
we come with all the work. You get two, I get three.
Well,
I'm running downstairs with three things.
I just have
Paul
to.
Wants this too, I guess.
Well, I just have to share my appreciation because committee members, you are taking on incredible tasks and that are for the benefit of children and. Representative Dolan for local control to still have it in and
I think that one out.
Well,
thank you for the comment.
Well, it is very important, and Representative Cannon's words are very taken to heart, so I appreciate that. With that, then, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3179. And committee, we have one more piece of work to do. Representative Roblin?
Yes. Committee, I move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Cannon to vote on House Bill 3178.
There's a motion to suspend the rules and allow Representative Cannon to vote on 3178. No objections. I will open a work session on 3178. Representative Cannon? Would you like to vote?
I vote aye.
Thank you.
So does that change the vote?
Aye. so moved. I will close the hearing on House Bill 3178. Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Nancy.
Oh, just a minute. Oh, an announcement from our staff.
Just members of the committee, just want to clarify for tomorrow, we have the full committee meeting. Since we did not work all the bills, a couple of them will drop off the agenda for tomorrow. So on the agenda for tomorrow's full committee is House Bill 2885, House Bill 3309, House Bill 3310, House Bill 3178. So the ones that will not be on the schedule, since we did not work them here in the sub, are House Bill 3335, House Bill 3179, and House Bill 2606. Also, for the good of the order, we have issued agendas today for out through next Wednesday, and we're trying to schedule for the rest of the week. Just a clarification that next week is the last week. This subcommittee will be meeting during the month of April, as currently planned.
As currently posted and planned.
Thank
questions
you, Madam
on
Chair.
That? Okay. With that, we adjourn. Thank you, staff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay.